Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Well, there is a lot going on tonight. We've got another immunity claim from Donald Trump. A key witness in the Mar-a-Lago documents case is now speaking out on camera. And all the while, the general election is full steam ahead. You know, just another normal Monday in 2024. Lucky for us, Congressman Adam Schiff is standing by right here in studio. And Congressman Dan Goldman is going to join me a little bit later on. But I do want to start tonight with a bit of a riddle for all of you. What does a Truth Social post about Jimmy Kimmel, a meeting with Hungarian autocrat Viktor Orban, and a last-ditch effort to delay the start of his first criminal trial tell us about Donald Trump? All of that might just seem like examples of unhinged and, frankly, strange behavior. It is. They are also the actions of someone attempting to project strength in order to cover up weakness. Really, they're all the actions of a wannabe dictator. Let's start with the news from earlier today. Donald Trump is now trying to delay the start of his criminal trial in New York until after the Supreme Court rules on the scope of presidential immunity. Remember that this trial, the one he's trying to delay, about the hush money payments that were made during the 2016 presidential campaign to adult film star Stormy Daniels to interfere in the election, is supposed to start just 2 weeks from today. It's around the corner. I mean, Trump is basically saying that just because he was once president, he is then immune from anything he's ever done in his life. And of course, Trump has tried this tactic in essentially every case against him. It's one of his favorites, including in the defamation suit he recently lost to E. Jean Carroll. So with a loss under his belt, he's again resorting to the same tactic that got him in trouble in the first place. He's attacking E. Jean Carroll and trying to create a bit of an alternate reality to cast doubt on the jury's findings. Over the weekend, and once again just this morning, Trump insulted Carroll and called her accusations false. So Trump is perpetuating propaganda about his perceived enemies. Something, by the way, you don't do from a position of strength, and you don't do if the facts are on your side. But given the people that he idolizes, none of this should exactly come as a surprise. Remember on Friday, just 3 days ago, Trump hosted Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban at Mar-a-Lago, and he gave this assessment of the authoritarian leader.
We kept in touch as nobody that's better, smarter, or a better leader than Viktor Orban. He's fantastic. He's the, as you know, the Prime Minister of Hungary, and does a great job. He's a non-controversial figure because he said this is the way it's going to be, and that's the end of it, right?
He can say this is how it's going to be, and people just do it. Isn't that great? Well, it's not how a democracy works, but that aside. The guy Trump is praising there is the same person who dismantled democracy in Hungary, which, by the way, has not held a free and fair election since 2010. A guy who created his own court system, eroding the independence of the judiciary, who has cracked down on the freedom of the press, openly admitting, saying the quiet part out loud, that reshaping the media helps him maintain his power, who has left no space for dissent, no space for challenge. That's how dictators keep control. So it's pretty easy to appear dominant when you've rigged the system in your favor. You see, Trump idolizes authoritarians who he perceives as all-powerful because they create the conditions necessary to maintain that power. That's how it works. But here's the thing. They're not tough. They're desperate. They're paranoid. And they're insecure. They are, in fact, weak. And so is Donald Trump. We see that in these claims of immunity. We see it in his attacks on E. Jean Carroll. And we even see it in something as petty as an attack on Jimmy Kimmel during the Oscars. I mean, does anyone think attacking the late night host while watching an award show is a sign that somebody is super secure? Look, at the end of the day, the point of all of this is not to psychoanalyze Donald Trump. We have too much to get to in the show. It is not really about his mental state. It's about understanding how his own weakness and desperation to hold on to power would impact how he would behave if he is sitting in the White House again a year from now. Fortunately, I have the first perfect person to talk to about all of that. Joining me now is Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff. Last week, he advanced to a November runoff in the race for U.S. Senate. Congratulations on your victory in the primary race. I know you still have a general election ahead, but there's just so much to get to. And I really wanted to start here with the immunity claim, because Donald Trump, we've seen this playbook before many, many times. We've seen this movie before. But this trial is supposed to start in 2 weeks. Is it possible it could be delayed beyond that simply because of his immunity claim here?
It is possible, and this has been Trump's modus operandi from the very beginning, delay, 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 in the hope that justice delayed can be justice denied. But there are a couple absurdities about this. First, the whole argument that as a president, you're immune somehow, that even if you try to overturn the election, the ultimate check on presidential power, the election, that somehow you're immune, which would be an open invitation to any president in the future to do the same. That claim is going to fall even with the Supreme Court. But what he's hoping is, he's hoping for a delay. It is even more absurd, though, in the case of this New York prosecution, because one other requirement of even making this claim is the acts have to be official in nature. Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of an office was he holding if writing hush money payments to a porn star was part of the job description?
Some office.
I guess so. So it's an absurdity, but this has worked for him. Mm-hmm. We litigated against him to get the Deutsche Bank records. Mm-hmm. He strung that out for years. The Oversight Committee litigated against him to get the accounting firm Mazars records of his. He strung that out for years. And he's hoping to string this out past the presidential campaign.
And there's a lot of money he owes in judgments that have already been made. I do want to play, and I mentioned this in the opening, he continues to attack E. Jean Carroll. So I want to play a little bit of what he said and get your response to that.
Ms. Bergdorf Goodman, a person I never met, I have no idea who she is, except one thing, I got sued. From that point on, I said, wow, that's crazy what this is. I got charged. I was given a false accusation and had to post a $91 million bond on a false accusation.
I mean, he had self-control for like a second there. I mean, do you hear that as meeting the bar of defaming? And do you think if you're Robbie Kaplan, you should act on that?
It certainly could. I mean, a jury could certainly conclude he's at it again. And what's more, the fact that he keeps having these judgments against him is just further evidence that he knows what he's doing is wrong. He knows he's defaming someone. It just cumulatively adds the proof against him. But it also shows both that, you know, you got to be either stupid or crazy to keep doing the same thing that is costing you or both millions. But it also shows no matter what he's instructed by his lawyers or anyone else, he just can't control himself. And you certainly don't want someone in the Oval Office who has no impulse control, not when they have the finger on the button, as in addition to many other things.
One of the things that's been concerning to me, and you've spoken a lot in the past about where the money is coming from and how we should be watching that, is, you know, he just made one payment, a bond payment, in one of these cases, in the E. Jean Carroll case. He owes a whole lot more money in the New York civil fraud case. We don't necessarily know who co-signed, if anyone co-signed. There aren't a lot of limitations on who can pay for this. How concerned are you about that and somebody having kind of leverage over somebody who might be sitting in the Oval Office?
I'm very concerned about it. I think all Americans should be concerned that someone could potentially have leverage to the tune of tens or hundreds of millions of dollars over the president of the United States. But even more broadly, what we've seen of Donald Trump, whether it was his efforts to build Moscow Trump Tower and his lies to the American people about it, or his son-in-law's dealing with the Gulf nations, this is someone who will use the Oval Office, if he ever gets the chance, as essentially a cash cow. If we think the emoluments and enrichments and the, you know, the stays at Trump Hotel and all the rest of that were troubling and violative of the Constitution and conflicts of interest, that is child's play considering what he may do if he's at risk of losing everything, which he is right now. He's at risk of losing everything. This is someone always motivated by greed, and the fact that whether it's Russia or the Gulf or other nations, that he could be so desperate to recoup his money that he'd be willing to do anything, sell out the country, ought to be of grave concern to us.
And any of those powers, as I understand it, could pay in some way or help him pay for bond payments in these cases where he owes money, where the judgments have already been made.
Well, they could. And if passes prologue, to get those records, to find out you know, who may be signing these or who may be guaranteeing these loans could take years.
Let me ask you about, you've spent a lot of time in the national security space, and it's worth restating how bizarre it is that the week he essentially secured the nomination, he decided to meet with Prime Minister Orban. Today, Orban said Trump, quote, will not get a penny to Ukraine if elected, which is telling, it's going even farther than Trump has. What do you make of the fact that we're getting more from the leader of Hungary than Trump on what his plans are? And is that kind of confirm what you already thought or make you even more concerned?
Both. It confirms, you know, the worst fears we have about Trump. But, you know, here's someone who in Viktor Orban is kind of a proxy enabler stooge of Vladimir Putin on the one hand. On the other hand, as you were pointing out, has dismantled his own democracy. So these are birds of a feather, exactly what Donald Trump wants to do. And you're precisely right. This doesn't show Trump's strength that he emulates these dictators. It shows his weakness. He wants to be them because he lacks power. He's a weak figure, and he emulates these strong men. He aspires to be like them. He has disdain for our democratic allies. No wonder NATO is terrified, but here's the good news in all of this. NATO is enlarging. NATO is growing. NATO is becoming stronger. Notwithstanding what Putin did, notwithstanding what Trump is threatening, NATO is growing, and thank God it is, and thank God we have a President Joe Biden who recognizes the value of NATO and how NATO has kept our nation safe. It's going to be, in many respects, a very clear contrast between these two candidates for president, but in no area more than national security does Joe Biden shine in supporting this international rules-based order, which has kept our country safe, and in no other way does Donald Trump endanger us than when it comes to NATO and national security.
It's such an interesting place to pay attention to. And you and I both share a love of national security issues. There was another report. There was a lot of reporting over the last 24 hours. Former Trump chief of staff John Kelly said this to CNN. My theory on why he likes the dictator so much is that's who he is. Every incumbent president is shocked that they actually have so little power without going to Congress, which is a good thing. It's civics 101. But in this case, he was shocked that he didn't have dictatorial powers to send U.S. forces places or to move money around with the budget. And he looked at Putin and Xi and that nutcase in North Korea as people who were like him in terms of being a tough guy, which sort of confirms. I mean, he was his chief of staff, what we all think. But what do you make of those comments from John Kelly?
Well, it kind of harkens back to Trump saying that under Article 2, he can do whatever the hell he wants. He has no interest in our institutions and our democracy. All he wants is power. And the tragedy is that what has made him possible, what made him possible in the first term, what makes him still viable is so many of the people I serve with on the Republican side of the aisle. Also, as it turns out, all they care about is power too. Mm. And notwithstanding that they think he's a danger, notwithstanding they think he's unethical and immoral and a liar, they will line up behind him. They've lined up behind him before. Mitch McConnell, who said basically he wasn't going to impeach because there were other remedies like prosecution, just lined up behind him again. Mm-hmm. All it is about power. And this is what has our democracy hanging by a thread.
It's so sad to watch. I hope you will stick around for just one more block because we have to sneak in a very quick 60-second break, and we'll be back right after that.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
We're back with Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff. Okay, lots more to get to. Tons of things that were out in the news today. There's also reporting out today from the New York Times citing a newly released transcript of an interview of the Secret Service agent who drove Donald Trump's vehicle on January 6th. And while the testimony makes Trump's intentions clear, the driver says Trump never lunged for the steering wheel. Now, I reread parts of your report that you all put out, and you made clear in that report that there were lots of people testified, and what you were reporting on was what his intentions were. But some of your Republican colleagues are suggesting that this disputes Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony. What do you make of that?
No, it doesn't. You know, here's the thing I think which is undisputed. That is, Trump wanted to go to the Capitol while this insurrection is going on, while people are marching to the Capitol. He wanted to go. He wanted to be there with them and he was irate about not being able to go. Now, there is some debate about how irate he was. Was it did he lunge for the wheel or did he just act irate or whatnot? Mm-hmm. Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony is what she was told by others.
It was secondhand.
It was
what secondhand.
She said. So the question is, if there is a conflict with what she was told, why was the person who told her this, either were they being truthful or were they being untruthful? That's the question. It goes more to the credibility of Ornato, this other witness, than it does Cassidy Hutchinson.
Yeah, and the intention is the thing that should be alarming. The intention of the sitting president of the United States. That's how I read the story. I wanted to ask you about Intel briefings, because you're the former chair of the Intel committee. You know what's in these documents and how important it is. I know you've said they should be dumbed down, which I think they were when he was president, if I remember correctly. But he didn't get them in 2021. There was a decision not to give them to him, if I'm recalling correctly, in the same capacity. Couldn't they just do that now? Shouldn't they do that now?
We've never had a situation where the candidate for president is also under indictment,
right,
for their, you know, negligent handling or worse, their obstruction investigation into classified information. If there was ever a case not to brief him, this would be the case. But there is this tradition. My guess is what they will do is they will give him a briefing, but they will make sure that nothing in that briefing would be a problem in terms of sources and methods. They will have to assume anything they tell him, he'll shoot off his mouth about, and he may shoot it off to the Russian ambassador. He may shoot it off to anybody else walking down the street, or he may show photos on his phone, or who knows what. So they know his track record. They'll be very careful. The problem is our allies and other sources, if they think what they give us may be shared with him, then they're not going to give us information.
Of course. But if you're our allies, don't you want it to not go to him at all? Wouldn't you want President Biden to just say, I'm sorry, you can't get it. You're under...
I'm sure they would like that. I'm sure they would like that. And I think the administration is going to be very careful. But they are going to have to continue reassuring our allies. Now, our allies are worried anyway, because they realize there's a risk that Donald Trump could be successful. And so whatever they're sharing with us now, whether it's given to him in a briefing or not, he may have access to. So that damage is already done. I think the only way our allies will have comfort is when he is finally defeated again, and the Republican Party not willing to part company with him because he's a liar and unethical and immoral and all the rest of that, not even willing to part company, I'm convinced, if he's a convicted felon, may decide they keep losing with Donald Trump. They need to move on. And only when the Republican Party does move on, I think, will our allies finally have confidence that America is really back.
I mean, I could talk to you about national security for an hour, but I do want to ask you about politics, because you did just win a primary against two formidable candidates. What did you learn, or what do you think people should learn about that race, or what message resonated? I mean, people think of California as a very blue state. It is, but it's also a very diverse state. It's a state with a lot of different people with different viewpoints.
You know, the state is also very pragmatic, just like the country. They're looking for people that can get things done. They do want a senator who will take on big fights when it's necessary to protect our democracy, our rights and our freedoms, reproductive freedom, among others. But they also want someone who's going to darn well get things done and deliver. And I was fascinated by Joe Biden's ad that he released a week ago, because he makes really two points in that ad. He gets things done, and he'll protect our democracy, our rights and freedoms. And this was exactly what I ran on. And I think, frankly, it's a good message for Democrats around the country. We will protect our rights and freedoms, but we're also going to get things done.
Absolutely. People care about that. And people care about democracy. I don't care what anyone says. It's important on the minds of all sorts of Americans. Congressman Adam Schiff, thank you so much for being with me here tonight, for coming into the studio. I really appreciate it.
Great to be with you.
Coming up, Congressman Dan Goldman joins me with his reaction to a key witness in the Mar-a-Lago documents case speaking out today on camera. And later, I'll talk to the journalist whose TikTok about Senator Katie Britt went viral as he uncovered the truth about a story she told in her response to the State of the Union. We're back after a quick break. So when it comes to criticizing Joe Biden, Republicans and right-wing media have developed kind of a favorite crutch they like to lean on. Joe Biden is old. And as we've stated many times in the show, the man is 81 years old. That's just a fact. But here's the thing with all the right-wing attacks about his age. They aren't at all consistent. I mean, ever since Joe Biden took office, folks in right-wing media have openly questioned his cognitive ability, frequently questioning who is actually running the White House, and asking tough questions like, how sleepy is Sleepy Joe? And yet, at the same time, when they are trying to accuse Joe Biden of mysterious, unproven corruption, he's all of a sudden a smooth operator and a keen mastermind. He's the big guy, as they like to say, behind what they baselessly allege to be a sprawling criminal scheme. Those seem like awfully hard things to square. I mean, how exactly is Sleepy Joe overseeing a massive criminal scheme? How's that possible? Well, over the past month, we've watched another round of whiplash. After the special counsel investigating Joe Biden's handling of classified information, Robert Hur released his final report about Joe Biden's handling of classified documents. Some of what he found was definitely embarrassing for the president, but he also cleared Biden of wrongdoing, even specifically comparing how Biden's actions were patently different from Donald Trump's handling of classified information. Huge differences. But the Trump-appointed prosecutor did leave a big old gift for Republicans and Fox News. In a move that is highly uncommon for prosecutors and special counsels, he chose to editorialize about Biden's memory, which, of course, sparked an all-out frenzy on the right.
Fox News alert, the White House is on defense over a damning report highlighting serious concerns about President Biden's mental fitness.
He just does not have what it takes to be commander-in-chief.
Clearly, there's evidence of severe memory loss, confusion, mental impairment.
I don't think Joe could be a Walmart greeter. Is it time to consider invoking the 25th Amendment? We don't need to settle for a weak, frail, cognitive mess as the president of our great country.
Couldn't be a Walmart greeter. I mean, more wild speculation from a bunch of people who have probably never been in a room with Joe Biden and certainly don't have medical degrees that I'm aware of. But then a twist. Joe Biden delivered the State of the Union address and suddenly he wasn't so sleepy.
Tonight, America saw, let's say, a very different Joe Biden. I might call him Jacked Up Joe. I thought it was beyond bizarre at times and frankly a little frightening.
You have to admit he was amped up, jacked up. Last night he spoke and he spoke fiercely and aggressively, but he was a cantankerous kind of combat ready guy.
I'm not a doctor, but they're giving him something. All of a sudden, this guy is like
amped
on speed or something, Jessica, to dismiss it like, oh, he's definitely clean. He should pee in a cup.
So first he's too sleepy. Then he's jacked up enough to need a drug test. What are we doing here, guys? I mean, well, tomorrow when Robert Hur testifies on Capitol Hill, I'm going to bet we're going to be right back to the Joe Biden is old, Sleepy Joe part of this never-ending loop. And since Dr. Hur is such an expert in mental acuity, I want Republicans on the Judiciary Committee to know that they're well within their rights to ask him about all of this.
They raided my house in Florida, Mar-a-Lago. They raided with no they had no reason to for electricity to Iraq. All complements of Ukraine and Russia wouldn't be fighting. I knew Putin. I know him very well. By far the most disgraceful part of Joe Biden's disservice is the divisive, crime-ridden nation we have become. That's why they're weaponizing law enforcement for high-level election interference against Joe Biden's top and only political appointment, a guy named me.
I mean, you need captions because it's so hard to understand what the heck he's talking about. But the real story here is that the current president was cleared in his classified documents case, and the former president is still facing 32 criminal counts of willful detention of national defense information, one count of conspiracy to obstruct justice, three counts of withholding or concealing a document, two counts of false statements, and two counts of altering, destroying, mutilating, or concealing an object or record. That is a mouthful. So they're not the same, and no amount of testimony from Robert Hur will make it so. I'm going to guess the...
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Congressman Dan Goldman has a few thoughts about all this, and he joins me next. After issuing a report that painted President Biden as an elderly man with a poor memory, special counsel Robert Hur will testify tomorrow before the House Judiciary Committee. In addition to fanning the flames of the Joe Biden is senile conspiracy, Republicans want to question Hur on why he didn't charge Joe Biden. And when they do, I want you to remember that none of them that seem at all concerned with Donald Trump's far more egregious classified documents case. In fact, today, a worker at Mar-a-Lago involved in that case has come forward. He tells CNN that he's cooperating with investigators and that he doesn't believe this case is a witch hunt, as Donald Trump would have us believe. Brian Butler is referenced as Trump employee 5 in the indictment brought by special counsel Jack Smith. And today he described how he unknowingly helped Trump's valet, Walt Nauta, deliver boxes of classified information from Mar-a-Lago to the former president's plane in June of 2022.
What happened is Walt left before me. We got to the airport. I ended up loading all the luggage I had, and he had a bunch of boxes.
You noticed that he had boxes?
Oh, yeah. They were the boxes that were in the indictment, the white banker's boxes. That's what I remember loading.
And did you have any time, any idea at the time that there was potentially U.S. national security secrets in those boxes?
No clue. No. I had no clue. I mean, we were just taking them out of the Escalade, piling them up. I remember they were all stacked on top of each other, and then we're lifting them up to the pilots.
In their indictment, the feds say those Mar-a-Lago workers were loading boxes of documents onto Trump's New Jersey-bound jet. On the very same day, Trump's lawyers told the government they'd handed everything over. Congressman Dan Goldman of New York is a former federal prosecutor, and he joins me now. Congressman, thank you so much for taking the time this evening. Let me just start by getting your reaction to what we're hearing from this witness. I mean, we knew the details before, but it is different to hear him on camera, I think. How valuable is what he's saying to prosecutors in this case, in your view?
Oh, Brian Butler, I think, is going to be important because he's going to provide really a lot of corroboration to so much of the other evidence. He is going to be able to narrate a little bit of all of the obstruction of justice. He is going to talk about Walt Nauta asking very odd questions about the surveillance tapes. There are a lot of little nooks and crannies that he's going to fill in, and he clearly is quite open and honest about what he saw, what his role was, and he did it unwittingly, it appears. But I think it'll be a powerful and credible witness for the prosecution.
I'm guessing you wouldn't recommend key witnesses doing television interviews who are going to be used by the prosecution. But given this is delayed, I mean, he worked there for 20 years. He seems willing to go out there and talk about what he's seen. I'm asking you now to put your political hat on. How important do you think this is in terms of the telling of the story of what happened in this case?
Yeah, look, I certainly spent 10 years as a prosecutor where I did not want a witness to say anything to anyone else because you just don't want to create more of a record where small missteps or small different details could trip you up. In this case, where Donald Trump's only defense is in the court of public opinion, I think that it is very important for Brian Butler and other witnesses to come forward publicly to explain what they know and what their role is. We are going to need to have Brian Butlers and former Trump cabinet secretaries and former Trump intelligence officials and former Trump national security officials. Everybody is going to need to come out and publicly explain why Donald Trump is such a risk to our democracy, to our national security, and to our global security. And by Brian Butler doing this, this takes a tremendous amount of courage because he will get a serious amount of vitriol, threats most likely that many of us get. But he's otherwise a private citizen and hasn't signed up for this. So this is a very bold and admirable, courageous move by Mr. Butler.
This is quite a news week, I think, as we all know. Her is testifying tomorrow. And I was curious your take on what the Democratic strategy should be there. It's clear from reporting the Republicans want to bring up the age issue again. They want to ask why Biden wasn't also, treated the same way in their view as Trump. Ludicrous. But what do you think the Democrats should do here?
Well, look, I'm a little concerned that he resigned the day before, that he's been prepping apparently with Trump orbit people. He was appointed by Donald Trump. And the reason I'm concerned about that is that if he were still an employee of the Department of Justice, he would be obligated to adhere to the rules, regulations, and restrictions placed upon him by the Department of Justice. Now, as a private citizen, he does not have those same obligations. And it's passing strange that he would resign the night before or the day before his public testimony as a Trump-appointed U.S. attorney who was then appointed to be special counsel by Merrick Garland. And he's being prepped by Trump officials or Trump associates. Then this feels much more political than a special counsel should otherwise be. And frankly, that's what I saw in his entire report, not just about the gratuitous age references, not just about his editorializing about Joe Biden writing books because he thought he was presidential material, which is purely subjective editorializing by the special counsel. But as a former prosecutor, that report does not contain the factual basis to make the conclusions that he makes. Even though he decided not to charge Joe Biden because he would never be able to prove that case to a jury, he impugned him by using the same language in the statute, by willfully retaining classified information is what he said, which is what the law prohibits. So he didn't charge him, but he said he did the conduct, and the evidence that he recounts does not support that. So I think there'll be a couple things that the Democrats hit on. I hope some of my colleagues will hit upon that. Many, of course, will hit upon the gratuitous editorializing. But also, he violated a number of DOJ rules and regulations in opining about things that are unrelated to his core task, which was to determine whether or not Joe Biden violated any criminal laws and should be indicted. And there's a good reason why you speak in indictments and not in reports like this, because there's no way for Joe Biden to cross-examine him, to cross-examine witnesses, mm-hmm. or in any way to defend himself against these accusations. So I'm looking forward to my colleagues, all of whom on the Judiciary Committee really know their stuff. They're gonna challenge him, I hope, and expect on a number of different things in that report.
One to watch. Lots of questions out there. You kind of alluded to about what exactly HERS aspirations are. I guess we will see. Congressman Dan Goldman, thank you as always for joining me this evening. And coming up, an independent journalist took it upon himself to fact check Senator Katie Britt and uncovered the truth about a misleading story she told during her State of the Union response. Jonathan Katz is standing by here in the studio and he joins me next. Back after a quick break. By now, unless you're living under a rock, you might have heard that Alabama Senator Katie Britt shared an incredibly misleading story in her response to the State of the Union. It was about a woman she met at the southern border who was tragically the victim of sex trafficking and rape. And it was clear that Senator Britt was telling that story in an effort to criticize President Biden's border policies. I mean, it was a response to his State of the Union. But to one reporter, it just didn't seem to add up in the moment. As independent journalist Jonathan Katz said, It wasn't that hard to find the identity of the victim, and from there, Britt's account began to unravel.
This is Carla Jacinto Romero's testimony to Congress from 2015 about her experiences in Mexico. If you scroll down, you see it took place between 2004 and 2008. And in 2004 to 2008, the president of the United States was George W. Bush. Vice president was Dick Cheney. And none of that really matters here because these events didn't happen in the United States. These crimes didn't take place in the United States or even near the border. They took place in Mexico.
So to recap, he found that this horrific crime did not happen on Joe Biden's watch. It happened many years before under a different president. It did not happen in the United States. Well, Katz's video quickly went pretty viral. And now Senator Britt is trying to clean up her mess.
Did you mean to give the impression that this horrible story happened on President Biden's watch?
No, Shannon.
But to be clear, the story that you relate is not something that's happened under the Biden administration, that particular person.
Well, I very clearly said I spoke to a woman who told me about when she was trafficked when she was 12. So I didn't say a teenager. I didn't say a young woman, a grown woman, a woman when she was trafficked when she was 12.
So, yes, when confronted with the facts, Britt did acknowledge that she knew the truth, but Britt is not admitting that she distorted the story. I mean, clearly in an effort to score political points. It was a response to the State of the Union. She's saying the audience should have inferred that the story had nothing to do with Joe Biden somehow, despite her very strong implication that it did. So what about the woman, Carla Jacinta Romero, whose tragic story Katie Britt chose to tell to millions of people? How does she feel about all of this? She's a pretty important player here. Well, last night, we found out.
In fact, I hardly ever cooperate with politicians because it seems to me that they only want an image. And I think she should first take into account what really happens before telling a story of that magnitude.
So remember, she went through something horrific. There's no question about that. The details of how it was described are just not accurate. And so to recap, Senator Britt chose to exploit the survivor story to score political points, and she withheld crucial facts to fit her misleading narrative about President Biden and the border. Jonathan Katz, the reporter who unraveled Senator Britt's story on TikTok, by the way, TikTok has good things, joins me now. He's reported extensively on migration and conflict around the world. I suspect that's why he knew this something was up here. He was the former bureau chief for the Associated Press in Haiti, and he's the author of two books, The Big Truck That Went By, How the World Came to Save Haiti and Left Behind Its Disaster, and Gangsters of Capitalism, Smedley Butler, The Marines, and the Making and Breaking of America's Empire. So when I was watching your TikTok video, I thought to myself, how did he figure this out? So walk through with us. I mean, you've covered immigration and migration for years. That may be a core part of the answer here. But how, when you were watching that, did something not feel right to you?
Something just seemed off about it. I mean, maybe it's because I've been covering this stuff for so many years that these things kind of operate on a more instinctive level. But I think part of it was that she was giving very specific, very lurid details about part of the story, but leaving the most important parts of the story extremely vague. There's no information about where this happened, what the name of the woman was, what country it happened in, when it happened. I was also wondering, well, the first thing I was wondering was like, well, what happened to the woman after this? Did she get asylum? Sounds like a good asylum case. Like, is this somebody who like is now living in the United States?
The
like,
case for, in some ways, not that was her intention.
Exactly.
But.
So like, what's going on here? And yeah, and then I just started Googling.
You said this in your video, I believe, but you did contact her, of course, and her team, I should say. And what was that back and forth like about the details here? There was none. They didn't respond at all.
No, they didn't respond at all. No, it was just me. It was just me and Google and press releases that they had, that they and the other senators who she had traveled to the border with had put out. So it was, the information was out there, just somebody had to go look for it.
I will admit, as much as it's disappointing, distressing, all of the things that she was so misleading, is a bit painful to watch her try to unravel from it.
Yes.
Did you, watching that Fox News interview, she seems to be implying that she wasn't trying to say this had anything to do with President Biden's border policy. I mean, do you buy that?
No. I mean, she makes a sandwich with a filling that I don't think I'm supposed to say on TV, right? It was like she starts off by saying this is President Biden's border policy. Then she puts in the anecdote, which she takes without permission, and apparently to the chagrin of the woman who she took it from. And by the way, this is also something, as somebody who's reported from a lot of countries in crisis, I've done a lot of reporting from developing countries, from the global south. I'm very familiar with the dynamic of people coming from the United States, from richer countries, from you know, elite classes, and taking somebody's story and then using it to aggrandize themselves. That might have been part of what got my attention, maybe at some level. And then she ends it by bringing it back to President Biden's border policy. So, yeah, I mean, her spokesman said to other people, he didn't respond to me, but he said to other people that the story was 100% correct. And maybe he meant, like, on the level of individual sentences, like if you broke down each individual clause, like maybe each individual clause had some nugget of truth in it, but put together as a story. And then when she said in the conditional, we would be horrified if these things happen in a third world country, using an archaic term, and, you know, but this is the United States. I mean, that's, I don't know how you get away from, she's very clearly beyond implying. She's just saying straight out that
it's true. I mean, I'm shocked they didn't contact the woman. I've been involved in a lot of speeches where you're talking about a lot of individuals. We only have about a minute left, and I really should talk to you about this for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. But what is the thing? You've been covering immigration and migration. It's become so politicized.
Yeah.
What is the one thing that people say or people speculate about this issue that you just drives you crazy because it's so wrong?
I think the biggest thing is that the victims of the dysfunction, of the backlog, of closing ports of entry, of forcing people to go through smuggling routes, are immigrants. They're migrants. Those are the people who are suffering. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way that it's talked about in Washington, the way that Republicans talk about it, the way a lot of liberals talk about it even, is that the ultimate victims are the American people, that it's your children, Mr. and Mrs. America, who these immigrants are coming for, that there's an invasion. And it's just a perversion. The people who are suffering are people who are fleeing the global south, who are fleeing crises, who are fleeing global warming, who are trying to make better lives for themselves and for their families. And they are being demonized and they are being weaponized in our politics here. And it hurts them and it hurts everybody.
Such an important point. I really appreciate you, Jonathan Katz, doing the TikTok. Thank you for your time and all of your incredible reporting. And coming up, a few thoughts from me about a manipulated picture seen around the world. We're back after a quick break. So, you're probably aware of a controversy swirling across the pond. It involves a member of the British royal family, rampant speculation about her health, and a certain photo. And yes, I know there are more serious things happening in the world. We've been talking about them tonight, like wars raging and the fragility of our democracy. But I spent quite a few years working crisis management at the highest levels of government, and I'm a little stunned by how they manage this. Because while there are no exact steps to ensure a PR nightmare goes away, there just aren't, there are some basic rules. Don't lie and get all the information out once, one time, if you can. So we may be getting a masterclass right now from one of the world's most prominent and enduring institutions on what not to do. For those who aren't following, back in January, the palace announced that Princess Kate underwent abdominal surgery and wouldn't be returning to public duties until after Easter. But that was about all they were willing to share. And you don't need a medical degree to know that a months-long recovery usually signals something serious. So that lack of transparency triggered a flood of conspiracy theories. Online went crazy. But surprisingly few pressing questions from the notoriously aggressive British press corps. And as Kate remained out of sight for months, the speculation only intensified. And the palace still refused to offer any new details that might temper the situation. Until yesterday, when a photo featuring Kate and her three children was posted to social media, celebrating Mother's Day in the UK. It was also supposed to show the world she's fine, nothing to worry about here. But hours after the photo ran in countless publications, global photo agencies took the rare step of pulling it. I mean, this is a very rare step. And this morning, the palace attempted damage control by acknowledging the photo was manipulated, but not sharing any new information or any additional information at all, really. Now, I have no idea what will happen next. I have no idea or extra information about the facts and what they actually are about Princess Kate's health. But I do know they've made this significantly worse than it needed to be by behaving as if the public and the press were perhaps too naive or trusting to notice it was only a doctored photo, only leading to more speculation and conspiracies and a guaranteed spot in textbooks on how not to manage a crisis. That does it for me tonight. You can catch the show every Sunday at 12 p.m. and Monday at 8 p.m. on MSNBC. And don't forget to follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For now, goodbye from Washington, and we'll see you next week.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.